Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
This is the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Dustin Hockensmith and Greg Pickle, we are here recapping Indiana-Penn State. Looking ahead a little bit to the second half of the season. Coming to you, as always, from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white. Drink blue and light. Talking all about Indiana. We're going to look around the Big Ten a little bit, and that conversation's changed quite a bit. Coming off a bizarre thumping by Purdue for Ohio State. Michigan continues its rise, so the whole complexion of the Big Ten has changed. The Big Ten West is a little bit of a mess. We'll touch on that as well. Finish off the show with your questions for Greg Pickle here in our Ask Greg segment, brought to you by tailgatewine.com. Greg, bottom line here, Penn State 5-2 now. They break a two-game losing streak. They beat Indiana 33-28. It's a win on the road. The end result, positive in its own way, but I think the means to get there, you're still seeing some red flags with this team.
Yeah, it's pretty concerning at this point. I think we know what Penn State is after, you know, a 5-2 start, and it's clearly a team that's young, inexperienced, and in some cases it just looks confused, and it looks like maybe whatever is being coached or taught in practice doesn't translate to the game field. And I mean, what do you make of the receivers at this point, Dustin? It's just been a group effort of really not great play. The offense has just looked, Ricky Ronnie spent a lot of time talking about rhythm during his pre-Indiana call with reporters. That was the first time he talked since training camp, but he spent a lot of time talking about needing to get more rhythm in the offense and keeping things on schedule and all that. The drops don't help, but his play calling doesn't always help either. I think it's a little combination of everything. You know, Trace McSorley, another game where, you know, he obviously was running the ball a lot, but in terms of getting the passing game going, that never happened, in a pretty swirling wind. You know, I just wonder, Indiana announced on Monday that Michael Penix, the backup quarterback, tore his ACL. I thought when he was, the play he left on was the Garrett Taylor targeting ejection play. And to me, I just wonder, Dustin, if he had a head injury, but it turns out he had a knee injury. But if he stays in that game, I think Indiana probably wins it. And we're having a very different conversation.
So I was going to ask you this later, but you bring it up now, the Garrett Taylor targeting call will cost him the first half against Iowa this weekend. Just like it did Antonio Shelton coming off. He did that against Ohio State, right? So that was Michigan State. What does the rule say? Because it's so tricky when you have these situations when a guy comes in and the offensive player maybe at the last moment changes their body around a little bit or lowers their head, and the head-to-head contact is clearly inadvertent. But I guess it's just head-to-head contact.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, the way James Franklin explained it was that, you know, Taylor lowered his hair, you know, changed his body position and his head. And, when you hit with the top of your helmet, you're almost always going to get flagged for that. But the thing that bugged me more than anything, well, there's two things. Number one, what is Garrett Taylor supposed to do? I mean, at some point, you're just going to have to ask guys not to tackle. I mean, it's the same thing as the roughing the passer stuff in the NFL. At some point, you know, the rule's going to have to be relaxed a little bit, or guys just aren't going to be able to tackle. So that's one thing. But the other thing is, you know, what more can a guy do? But the other thing is, that wasn't flagged originally. I mean, it was after review. I don't understand how it went from no flag to review to flag and ejection. I understand targeting can be reviewed at any point, but why was it not deemed as targeting on the field until the second, the replay review obviously changed how that was being ruled?
So I think the bottom line with this rule, the bottom line, as you mentioned with the NFL roughing the passer rule, is that you're just going to have, by its nature, if you're going to implement these things to make the game safer, which is ultimately what this is all about. It just so happens in a lot of cases to benefit the offensive side more than the defensive side. Mm-hmm. But that's neither here nor there. You're going to have a lot of well-intentioned plays get whistled. And I think the beef that people have, it's so severe with the targeting.
Right.
Like immediate ejection. So depending on when that happens in a game, you could lose a guy for 3-4 quarters in one game.
Right.
And then two more quarters in the next game. It could be the difference in a win or a loss. And in a case like Garrett Taylor's, I don't think you have any evidence to suggest that that's malicious. It's just the way that the two guys came together. It's football.
Right.
You know,
that's exactly it.
I think that's the issue that a lot of people in the NFL have with those rules too. It's just messy. Anyway, I think there's so much, you know, big picture stuff to continue talking about. I made the comment you know, last week at some point on another podcast that what Penn State is doing right now is just so much bigger than the wins and losses in their own right. A lot of people are just trying to evaluate what they have in Penn State's program as a whole, and that can be fair or unfair. I honestly don't know if you can ask those questions. If you throw out, I mean, I'll ask you, can you throw out what Penn State did so well in 2016, what they for the most part did so well in 2017, just because you've had some of these trends start to emerge?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't think so. I think that, you know, things are moving in the right direction still. Are they ahead of schedule like James Franklin said last week? You know, I don't know. It's hard to see because the program's at such a weird place. You have a veteran in Trace McSorley on offense, but a lot of young guys that are making plays on offense, defense, and special teams, a lot of young guys that have to make plays like Raphael Cech and Jake Pinniger on special teams. I mean, you can see where the talent is clearly better, but is the drop-off from Joe Moorhead, Josh Gattis, and Charles Huff as significant as it looks? I don't know. It's something to consider. You know, I think the other thing, too, is that what's going on with, you know, Ricky Slade? What's going on with some of these other younger guys that have not really seen the field much? You know, Slade didn't have a carry at all against Indiana, which I thought was surprising. When Miles Sanders had to come off, it was Journey Brown that came in. So I thought that was bizarre. But for the most part, Dustin, I just think that at this point, you can't dismiss or forget about what, you know, Penn State was able to accomplish the last 2 years. And look, this could very well be an 11-win season, too. But they're going to have to turn a lot of things around for that to happen.
I know a lot of people are kind of asking that question about Ricky Slade. He has played in 5 games.
Right.
So the redshirt rule thing is no longer a thing. He's not sitting because they want to preserve anything. There's just something that we don't know about that's happening on that front. I always think it's funny in situations like this. So Penn State won the game. It's 33-28. They didn't answer a lot of questions that people have going forward. They're fair questions, too, be it about play calling, offensive identity, the state of the defense, 554 yards against Indiana, the play of the wide receivers, the special team stuff that keeps kind of popping up. But I think people saying a lot of definitive things about this program. I don't know if I would recommend or going into comment sections, going into Twitter mentions of certain people. Well, like when you post a story, for example, the Twitter mentions, it just gets so negative in a hurry. I saw words like regression, bad coaching. I think clueless was a word that was thrown out there. So I think it's worth asking again, how much good faith has James Franklin, does he afford himself by doing such a good job for 2 years? And I think ultimately to me, I just can't get past the idea that this 2018 team was not supposed to be the elite team for Penn State. This
right.
was as close to rebuilding, I think, as you can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing to me, Dustin, at this point is that James, I can no longer be dissuaded about the fact that James Franklin really hurt himself with that great elite post-game rant against Ohio State. This is a guy that's really measured and really usually is on message and has good messages for his players and for the fans. But that one, I mean, you just set yourself up for failure. Right? You say, we're not going to be great anymore. Well, you're not. And you're not elite either. You might be good. It might actually be worse than great. So, and that's the kind of stuff you set yourself up for. And I think the other thing, too, the more I thought about it, and our colleague Bob Flounders made this point to me a couple weeks ago, but, you know, you're almost telling the players that, hey, we're there. Like, we've arrived. Like, we're not elite yet, but we're at this great level. And, you know,
like, great sounds pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's almost it just feels like that whole thing really, really did not go the way he wanted it to, come across the way he wanted it to. And at the end of the day, you know, obviously they have a lot to live up to if they want to live in either one of those worlds moving forward. Because guess what? They're about to hit a 3-game stretch, Iowa, Michigan, and Wisconsin, that's going to be able to push them around just like Indiana. I mean, if Indiana pushes you around, what are the next three teams going to do? So I don't know. They have a lot to figure out this week. I think they have to make some changes defensively. You know, Micah Parsons played, I'd say, probably like 40 to 50% of the snaps. I think that needs to go up. He's him and Cam Brown are their best two linebackers, and it needs to reflect the snap count needs to reflect that. I don't think it has so far this year, and defensive tackle depth is limited. You look at Sharif Miller and Ettore Gross-Matos, and you just wonder if those guys aren't just right. I think the whole starting four on the defensive line is run down at this point, and they're about to face the three, you know, biggest meat grinders, if you will, on the schedule. So I'm not sure if the defense is getting better anytime soon.
It's the Keystone Kickoff Show brought to you by GoPSURV.com, the best single game RV value in Happy Valley. Check them out at GoPSURV.com. Fantastic RVs you can rent for individual games, free shuttle to the game, large projection TV, free Wi-Fi in the lot. You can enjoy tailgating with 409 barbecue and wine along with Labatt Blue beer. You can go to GoPSURV.com for all the details. This weekend with the home game, Friday evening tailgate. What are the times? 6 to 8 p.m.? 6 to 10 p.m. Oh, it's a bash. So you check them out, GoPSURV.com. Come check out the tailgate, see what the lot has to offer for you. So you mentioned the idea of the defensive line, Greg, getting worn down. And it's another game where the other team ran so many more plays than Penn State did. And
right.
I'm not really one to look at time of possession and look at the play count and say that that's a definitive measure of success or failure, because I think there's a lot of gray area there with teams that want to move the ball quick. But, you know, it's a couple games in a row. I can't remember what Michigan State ran, I think 89.
Yep.
Indiana ran 100 plays.
Yeah.
These guys are out there for 100 plays. Part of it is the way that the Penn State offense moves, and that they're gonna try to quick strike from time to time. They're gonna move fast. They're gonna do what they do. Sometimes they're gonna score points in a hurry. But part of it is just an inability to get off the field sometimes.
Right. Yep.
And either way, both of those factors, it's a little troubling to see that trend continue against Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the third downs can be a problem at times. I don't have the stats right in front of me, but I think Penn State was actually better than most would think on third down. The problem, though, was that there were too many times where Indiana didn't have. So James Franklin talks a lot about Penn State's formative offense being better if it had better first and second downs, and it also talks a lot about, you know, they're bad on third down, but that's because they're good on first and second down. Well, Indiana was good on first and second down. Dustin, 50% of almost 50% of Indiana's yards came on first down. They gave up over halfway to a first down on average, on each Indiana first down. So, I mean, it was not good. It was just they let Indiana dictate the terms and stay on schedule. Penn State, on the other hand, could not. I'm sure we'll get into it, but I'm not. This song and dance about the formative offense is just getting old. You know, they were basically resigned to this point to say, well, you guys complained that we did it one way, so we did it another way, and that didn't work either. What do you want us to do? Well, I think what most Penn State fans would want you to do is figure out why. This is John Donovan, Joe Moorhead, and now Ricky Ronnie. What is the common denominator? Something's not going right in these formative offense situations, Dustin. It's been a problem for 5 years now. I think most Penn State fans would simply like the Lions to figure it out heading into the final five games of the season.
So Iowa 9 out of 21 on third down, Penn State 5 out of 15, 33 minutes and 58 seconds. Indiana held the ball in that game for 26-02 for Penn State. That's been a theme going forward. The late game stuff, also a theme. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and look at the four-minute offense, look at Penn State's offensive identity, and a lot more coming out of the Indiana game. Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. GoPSURV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
Life gets complicated, and it only gets more complicated when things change, which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.
409 Tailgate Club proudly introduces our tailgate wines. Like our great sauces and rubs, you'll enjoy our wines at your next cookout, tailgate, or even as a great gift for that fan of the blue and white. Speaking of blue and white, you've got to try our award-winning Sapphire Blue, made from pure blueberry juice. Or how about our Old Main Pinot Grigio and 1855 Vidal? Go to tailgatewine.com and find all our PA preferred wines. That's tailgatewine.com.